Welcome to Battling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
Derek, episode number 450.
Is that what we are? Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Right?
I didn't even know.
And it's October already.
Rocktober.
Rocktober, baby. Woo!
Yeah.
All right, I'm ready for bed now.
Halloween's coming up.
Halloween's coming up, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanksgiving's coming up. Birthdays are coming up. There's a lot going on this month. This is a great month.
We went to, I think it was McGregor last Halloween. We weren't there for Halloween. We just happened to be there at Halloween.
Right.
And it was, like, I remember, like, people saying that Mew Lake, they decorate. McGregor was decorated. Like, people went to a lot
of
trouble.
If you haven't gone to Halloween at Mew Lake, there's guys with, like, those 12-foot tall skeletons.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, yeah. like, the whole site.
Yeah.
They get there on Friday. They spend all day Saturday setting up for Saturday night. It's like, holy jeez. You know, you see that little wheel spinning from on the electric meter there at the park?
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden Halloween starts.
It's going to get fire.
You could cut wood with that thing. It's going so fast. yeah, lots going on this month, man.
Yeah, is the now unofficial witches paddle board event, that's on Halloween Day? What, do they do it on Halloween?
Oh, people do them all month.
All month long?
Yeah. Yeah, well, usually the Saturdays or something, like the weekends.
Yeah,
yeah, everybody heads out all on Saturdays and do it all month long.
Yeah,
all month long, all month. Yeah, I won't be doing one though.
No,
no, nope. I refuse to do one because I don't have a paddleboard.
Well, that solves it, buddy. You don't even have to make a choice.
I'm going to sit there, stand up in my canoe, stand upping in my canoe. With my pole.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pole along.
Yeah.
See if I blend in. Hour four. They still haven't noticed.
They haven't noticed me. A wolf in the middle of the sheep.
Right? Day 36. They still haven't noticed. I've been accepted as one of the herd. Oh, the small things that amuse us.
I know.
You are back from your trip?
Yeah, I did a trip last week. I'm still exhausted from it. It was busy. I normally do the Burt Reynolds Memorial River Run this time of year.
Yeah, is that sort of dead now?
I think they went the way of the dodo.
It's run its course?
People just started, Martin Scott are on a hiking trip down the States, and Mike sold his whitewater canoe, and I'm not sure what happened there. Nobody ever told me. They just stopped.
They just stopped going. They
found other things to do.
Dissipated.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? That's just sort of off topic. Not really off topic, but sort of. When I started canoe tripping, there was core people that I would go with.
Yep.
And then things change over the years, and you start going here, you start going there, and there's some people that, no, I only want to go to this area, or I'm going over to this area now, because that's too far to go, and you drift apart from some of those people, and it's just like, you'll run into them somewhere and go, man, I haven't canoe tripped with you in like 10 years sort of deal, but we used to canoe like 4 times a summer for 10 years.
Yeah, I know,
How do we go from 40 trips to zero?
Yeah. So now I got to find a new group to... The group at work, they've been trying to get me to join them for quite a few years now. And but I've always been busy with the boys doing the Burt Reynolds Memorial River Run. I think we did it for 6 years in a row. Anyways, I said, hey, guys, I'm not tripping this fall. And I wouldn't mind joining us. So.
Yay, new low man on the totem pole.
Exactly, yeah.
Get me a beer.
Yeah. So it was good. It was Crown Land Camping, North Sudbury. Just you backwoods roads and stuff, but it's currently not logging roads. Now they're just access roads into all these lakes and in the backcountry area there. And, but yeah, it was, we saw so many hunters there all week. So it's currently, I think most of the people were just grouse hunting or something, but it's currently bow season for moose. So we were base camping and we just kept seeing all these vehicles go by with hunters, right? It's like, oh, we better wear some orange.
Everybody wear orange. Don't tell Derek.
Yeah. But it wasn't too busy. We were off on a point somewhere. We had a really nice site. We base camped. We had intended on doing a bit of a loop trip, but once we got there, people were like, because there was two of the watercraft were those gigantic fishing kayaks.
Oh, because I want to portage one of those.
It takes two people.
Right?
Yeah, it takes two people. And so we just said, you know what, let's base camp. Let's just be lazy. We'll go out and do a bunch of fishing and whatever. And so
not a lot of planning on this one.
Well, no, these boys just, they tend to do that. Like
they just show up and say, here's our area.
Yeah. Well, no.
We'll do what we do.
No, so in the spring they did Algonquin Park. They met up with Mike Burns on the trip.
Okay.
That's the one I had to cancel.
Right.
Yeah. So Mike was, he's like, hey, where's Derek? It's like, he called in. He couldn't make it. So I was supposed to do that trip, and it was a big loop trip through Algonquin. And, so I couldn't make that one. Last fall I couldn't make that one either, just other commitments. And, so I made this one. So normally they do a loop trip. What is it? In the spring, they said they had so much mud. They said they're dragging knee deep in mud trying to get through an area. And a couple of the guys, like, they didn't have fond memories of the trip. Some of them did. Some of them thought it was still fun.
No idea what they're talking about. Till years later when you remember that trip we took.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like that three kinds of fun.
Yeah. So, and then you say, who organized that? Well, Derek did. I'm going to stab Derek because I still have mud in my shoes.
So this trip was supposed to be a bit of a loop trip, just to hit a bunch of lakes for fishing. And then one of the guys, like just a couple weeks ago, he bought these two new fishing kayaks.
Right.
And so that changed our plans. It's like he had just got them.
So you got to use them before the year's up.
Exactly.
Understandable. Yeah, understandable. Yeah.
So he worked out the bugs in the kayaks, and they were neat. I never used one myself, but I saw them. It's like they were standing up in them casting away. Mm-hmm. It's like, why is that so stable? And there's a live well in the
things. Yeah. Oh, some of these things, like, man, when you start watching them and reading up on them.
This is still a kayak.
Well, and see, there's the rub. There comes a point where... Is that just like a skinny bass boat with no big motor? Is that like the poor man's bass boat?
Exactly.
Right? Because if you look at a bass boat and you look at one of these fishing kayaks, bass boat's got a motor. Fishing kayak's got a motor. Bass boat's got all these places to hold your rod. Kayak's got all these places to hold your rod. Yeah. Live well. Can stand up and fish.
Exactly. Yeah, I wonder. They were nice boats, though.
Definitely.
And so one of them had a 100 amp hour lithium battery. One had a 50 amp hour lithium battery. And heavy. No, lithium batteries are a lot lighter.
Were they light?
Well, I didn't pick it up.
Wow.
But she
stole it.
But I picked up the kayak that I helped them move, one of the ones without the battery in it. Because the 100 amp hour battery, which is actually, he said it was light. I didn't pick it up. But because it's lithium, they're like half the weight of a normal lead acid battery, right?
They still wouldn't be heavy, though.
They still would be heavy, but as part of that boat, it's still a very small percentage.
It's heavier than not having one at all.
Correct. But they had some, the little trolling motors were built right into the center of it. They just pop out. And
are those the e-paddle, e-PDLs?
So they took out the foot pedals.
Yeah, and put in the electric.
Yeah. Yeah, so the foot pedals, they were sitting there on the beach and after they popped them out. So they could have done both, and they didn't. They did the lazy thing. But it was neat to see them motor off, making a wake.
Well, these boats, though, these e-pedal kayaks, like, you can have them going a certain direction. All you got to do is reach down and turn a knob or something if you want to do. So you can actually slowly cruise along the side of a weed bed and cast.
Exactly.
Right?
Or you can sit there stable in a low current. Just like not moving and be in a current.
Yeah.
If it's not too big of a current, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, if you get that motor going at the right speed, then you're just sitting right there. Like at a mouth of a river?
Well, he said there's a setting for it was, it's...
Oh, it's, there's a certain setting on it?
Yeah, there's a setting for, it was a GPS, so you could have it sit in a spot.
Oh.
So if you want, if you could, if you found a hole, a fishing hole or whatever, he just pushed the button and the GPS does all the work and it just holds his position.
Yeah, because we've done that in the kayak or the canoes where we've had to take an anchor or tie off to something and sit in the front of the river mouth
where it joins the lake.
Yeah. And you do some good fishing there, right?
I've seen some people with the bass boats that have the outriggers that they stab down into
the creek bottom, the big posts,
and that just holds you right there in the creek and stuff for fishing. So, but yeah, there was a, we had caught a lot of bass. Most of them were put back.
Right.
But we did save a few a day.
Save a couple.
For just for lunches.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was good. It was kind of neat. It was, we base camped, like I said, and like on, what was it, on the Saturday, we all just sat on the beach and cast it off the beach and didn't move. I'm a little crispy here. The weather was so fantastic. We just sat there in the sun and
not too hot, the nice beach. And coolish.
It was nice. So the lowest I think in the daytime was 22-25.
Right.
And in the daytime it felt pretty hot. And at night it was I don't think it went below 10 or 12 degrees.
That's not bad.
Because
at all.
I mostly just slept with the sleeping bag open, and it was like, this is not too bad.
Well, you can sleep like in the cooler nights.
Yeah, yeah.
You get that more comfortable sleep.
Oh, exactly. Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's just like perfect.
But it's just in September. You don't expect it, right?
Well, I'm sticking to my theory that going to be nice till the end of November. That's my theory right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, weather was good, and you enjoyed that. What about wildlife besides fish?
Partridge or grouse. The grouse are stupid. Like, there's one point where we're driving along, and it was on the way out when we were leaving, and there was a grouse standing. The grouse looked like a roadrunner.
Yep.
Anyway, so we rolled up to it, closer, stopped. And the Doug stuck his head out and asked the bird to move.
Meep, meep.
You got to get out of the way. But yeah, and then he started rolling it in, and the bird just kind of sauntered off the edge of the road. And it's like, what are you doing? On the way in, though, we came around. There was a long stretch that crossed a bridge, and on the other side of the bridge we all stopped, and Doug stopped the truck, and we looked, and it's like, is that a fox? Yeah, that's a fox. No, yeah, it was a fox. And it was, what's it got? And it had a grouse in its mouth. He just looked at us. You could see the wings.
So maybe going out, that was his buddy looking for him.
Yes.
Hey, maybe. You guys seen my buddy?
Have you seen my buddy?
He was hanging around with his fox earlier. I haven't seen him in a couple of days.
Yeah, this fox just trotted off into the woods with a big bird in his mouth. So that was cool. Yeah, so we didn't see... What did we see? One of the guys said he heard something in camp one night, but then it wandered off, and somebody else said they heard something in the water. I had my hammock tent.
Right.
And so I was in the bushes off of the campsite, and so I didn't hear anything that these guys heard. So... But yeah, it was... It was nice. There wasn't a lot of animals. We saw one morning in one of the side trails. We were out just wandering around, and we could see where a moose was clearly running, because you could see he was kicking up sand and dirt on the trail, and there's one spot where he skidded to a halt and turned a bit and then kept running. And
was it running? Digging the...
Oh, probably. Maybe that's what it was.
They were scraping off and all that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. There was a guy at work. He was moose hunting last week, and he said, "Yeah, the moose were in full rut." He says, "All you got to do is make a sound, and they come running towards you. Say, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, so, yeah, run over you.
Yeah."
So Kevin Callan has he's doing the Frontenac Trail Challenge.
Oh.
There's 11 trails, and between September 1st and October 31st, you have to do all 11.
Really?
Yeah. It's this thing. Anyway, so he was talking about moose.
Mm-hmm.
And he says moose and deer. They said, you know, when you see them and these big racks on them,
yeah,
he says, you don't have to worry about that because they're not going to come at you with the racks. They'll come at you with their feet, their hoofs.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And they'll stab you. So when you're looking up at the rack going, oh, he's going to get me.
Yeah.
He just gets you with the
foot. I've seen videos of people getting trampled by a moose. The moose just stands up on his back legs and just... He just freewheels his hoofs and just whack, 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 whack.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that looks dangerous.
Right?
Don't want to be part of that.
Yeah, but they're in that, they're doing that right now, running everywhere and digging holes and
all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
But you had a good time.
It was a fantastic, the weather was so good. It was so good. It was, I was concerned at first because on the way up we had a lot of rain.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we got there, it stopped raining. So it was nice.
Can't ask for anything better than that.
Had some nice...
If any rain's going to happen, let it happen while we're driving.
Exactly, yeah. It did rain a lot while we're driving. But at night, it cleared up, and it was just... It was nice. We had a nice campfire each night, and it was relaxing, and yeah, it was good. It was, all, yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's
time of year. You just sit around that campfire with your warm jacket on, and you soak up that heat from the fire.
I didn't even have a warm jacket on.
Really?
No, it was just warm. It got down to like 10 or 12 degrees at like 5 in the morning. So, I was just in a, what was I had a hoodie the first night because it was raining, and then just a shirt the other nights. It was nice. It was comfy. It wasn't cold at all.
Gotta like that.
Yeah. And in September, up north. And I was expecting, because it is late September, I expect a lot more leaf color change. But there wasn't a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also a lot of birch. Birch are kind of late to change. So, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I figured I'll be gone by now.
But by the last night that we were there, there was enough of a change that the leaves weren't fully changed, but there was brown leaves on the leaves constantly falling off the trees on the ground.
Yeah.
So, it's like, oh, there's a pile of leaves here. Where'd that come from?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was, that was different.
Yeah, well, October, mid-October is like...
Not far away.
Not far along, right? Like that second week, third sort of
that
deal.
Things will start changing then.
That's like it's end up being peak times, right? So,
yeah.
Some days you miss it. Some days, some years you...
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know,
You're dead on to it.
Yeah.
Some years you're ahead of it.
I haven't looked at, there's a, was it Friends of Algonquin or Algonquin Park, Ontario Parks? They have a leaf color...
Yes.
Percentage, grade, whatever, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So I haven't looked at that yet, but I'm sure they're changing.
Yeah, you know, because like I say, I always do my Thanksgiving week trip. And there's years where I've been up in Algonquin and on my birthday there, it's like full on blazing colors.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year I'm up there and, oh, you missed it by a week. And then the next year you're up there and it's like, no, it hasn't really started yet.
You're a week early.
What the heck? I give up. If I'm there and the colors are there, then so be it.
Mm-hmm.
But great time spent with friends. Glad to hear that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Just going back to the kayaking things. Sportfishingmag.com has an article from September 26th called A Balancing Act. And it's tips to help maximize fishing while standing in your kayak.
If I had gotten a chance to use the kayak, they were very popular. Well, one, the battery died, and then the other one was very popular, even more popular. But so I didn't bother. I just, you know, I'll fish from shore.
You lazy sod.
Caught a lot of fish right from shore. Caught a lot of fish.
I don't care.
Right,
I would have been out there where the big ones are.
Well, they weren't my boats, right? So.
So, hey, are you using that? No.
Exactly. I'm going to kill your battery.
Never to be seen again. Throw the pedals in there and go, baby.
But yeah, even if I had gone out and used it, I don't know that I would have tried to stand up on it. But
it's just like a, yeah, I mean, it's just like canoe poling.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. They are stable.
Yeah.
I mean, they're meant to be that, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you see these guys with those things out on the ocean.
Oh, I know.
With the big
18
million pound tunas and sailfish
getting
and marlins.
By sharks and getting looked at by orcas. And
right?
It's like, ah!
Good times.
Giant squid
Yeah.
coming up from the depths to eat you.
I was reading an article. Everybody's into this hippo moo something, this baby hippo. It's all over Instagram and the social media.
Hippo. It's in some Asian zoo, Japanese zoo.
Somewhere. Yeah.
So it's a mini hippo. And of course, a mini hippo is going to have an even minier baby hippo.
Mudang.
Mudang is the Mudang, name of it?
Yeah.
It's tiny.
So I'm following links to what's so great about it. What's so great? And then we worry about bears and moose and whatnot. And we're talking down, the, you know, alligators and stuff down in the States. And we're talking sharks over in Australia.
Yeah.
Well, these guys, this couple were in Zambia on a canoe trip with a tour group, I guess.
Zambia.
Yep. Paddling along. And all of a sudden, something hammered the side of their canoe. Oh. Both of them go in.
Oh.
Hippo.
Yeah, they're dangerous.
Dude's got these punctures in his arm. Yeah. Big 10-inch gash down his side.
I don't know what this... I'm not going to look it up now, but I've heard stats that hippo attacks are huge in Africa.
Yeah.
You have a greater chance of being attacked by a hippo than
we've seen documentaries where people going down some of these rivers, and they say there's hippos, and then it's like, okay, we're getting off the water, and if they're coming closer, okay, we're climbing the trees now. they do not fool around when they know there's hippos. They do not fool around.
Yeah.
Because they're slow on land, but they are fast.
I've seen
underwater
video of a hippo chasing a speedboat, and you could just see a ripple. Suddenly it would splash out of the water, and it's like, that's moving really fast.
Yeah.
It's like
the cheetah of the water.
Yeah.
Right?
And if you're in a canoe or a kayak, you're done for. Yeah. You don't have a chance.
You wouldn't.
You cannot paddle that fast.
Nope. Nope. So it dragged dude down and spun him around and whatnot, and then let him
go. But he lived.
And when he got to the surface, apparently down he went again. And this time, they say it threw him in the air like a rag doll towards land.
Yeah,
luckily, because then people grabbed him.
Yeah,
he's still alive, but it happened a few years ago.
Got a puncture wound.
Yeah, he's got like massive scars from this thing. He says, "I'm down there thinking, this is how I die." So this is it. This is how I die.
The old commercials for Wildlife Canada or something.
Oh, Hinterland's Who's Who?
Hinterland's Who's Who. And I remember they did a joke one back in the 80s, 90s about the house hippo.
Oh, the house hippo,
because it used to make little tiny footprints from the water dish.
And they lived under couches.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I remember those.
The Canadian house hippo.
Oh, the good old days. Mm-hmm. When's your next trip?
Thanksgiving with the family.
That's right.
And then November, possibly in Algonquin, if things go right.
Has anything been said about a location yet?
Islet.
It is going to be?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
there
so.
There was him and Han, and
because
it's close to backpacking trails or something. And
exactly,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
Daytime activities.
All right.
But it really depends on weather, too. Because if it's just going to be pouring rain, I'm not going to sit under a tarp all weekend.
You can go out and get wet.
Yeah, I suppose you could still go out and get wet.
Yeah, we did that.
Yeah.
Actually, Marcus Rubino and I did that.
Oh, yeah?
When we were on Bice Lake. Everybody was sitting there and under the thing, and I'm like, I don't want to go fishing. Let's go fishing. We went out and got absolutely drenched.
Yeah.
But we had a good time fishing, caught a couple, and everybody else just sat back in there under the tarp. It's middle of summer, so it's not like you're getting hypothermia or anything, right?
Yeah.
Either, but some days you just got to, you're out there for the fun.
Yeah, but then sometimes it doesn't get fun, especially really late in the year, and you get sleet, freezing rain, snow. I've been on trips in late September. I used to do a lot more solo trips, and I remember once I was on Bice Lake, and this was really early on. This would have been 2002, 2003, when I first discovered Algonquin, when I first moved to Ontario. And I didn't have the greatest gear, so I thought, oh, I'm going to layer up. So I had a couple layers, but my outermost layer was like this completely water and vapor-proof rain jacket. I couldn't wear it. I was getting soaking wet just wearing it.
Yeah.
All of my perspiration or anything that came off my body was just coating the inside of the rain jacket.
I don't know how many years I paddled wearing jeans.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was it, right? My grandfather used to call him, just throw your dungarees on and let's go.
Yeah, there you go.
That was always our camping gear, was a pair of jeans, right? Or dungarees.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting there going, oh, maybe I should buy myself some, like, quick dry pants and stuff like that, right? It's amazing. I mean, hey, what you don't know when you first start, you eventually pick up the knowledge, right?
So. I've got such better clothes now. But that time...
I don't wear clothes anymore.
At that time, it was late September. And the days were... The weather was nice, but I had a few days where it snowed. I had to put up a tarp to block the wind. I had to... I remember at night taking that stupid rain jacket off as I was layered and just shivering and shaking all night long. And it was wet enough that one of the days I couldn't get a fire started. And it's like... why am I here?
Yeah.
So I left a day early. I was supposed to be there, I think, better part of a week.
Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Well, anything when it gets really bad weather in the fall.
Yeah.
Like I've told the story before about going into Rock and that ice storm hitting that no one knew was coming.
Oh. Yeah.
I'm leaving early.
Yeah.
But then there's other trips where you're paddling and you're like, this should take me this day to this day to this. And then you're like, okay, that took me a whole lot less time than I guaranteed. And
that was really fast.
I'm done a day and a half early.
Yeah.
So, all right. Oh, well.
Yeah.
While you were up north, Hurricane Helene hit.
I had no idea. I came back and started looking at messages and Instagram and stuff. And I'm like, oh, look at all these videos. It's like, oh, that's now.
Yeah. Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas, Tennessee, southeastern states.
What a
hammered. Lots of flooding.
Unfortunately, a lot of people died in it. Mm-hmm. It's very scary how strong and fast this thing whipped through. Nobody expected it to be the size of it was.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow.
And we've talked about it before. Could you imagine being on a trip and this happens?
You didn't answer my question when I asked about that.
What?
I asked, when were you supposed to be on your trip? Remember you canceled it?
No,
you were going to be in Tennessee.
Next week.
It's next week.
Next week was when I would have been down there.
So you'd probably be canceling it now.
Yeah.
Because
we were supposed to have been out in Colorado and whatnot like 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And that then coming fine. Back and then mm-hmm. heading south towards Tennessee and Georgia and all
because
of that.
Because nobody's going to Tennessee, Georgia next week.
Well, mind you, we just printed a job for that has to go down to Tennessee, and I offered to drive it. The company was going to pay me gas money to take it down.
I'll deliver
it. I'll smuggle that bad boy across the border and get it over there for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know that was supposed to be like next week.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, not going down there. I've tried to go down on that trip 2 years now.
Oh, yeah?
Not in a row, but twice. And mm-hmm. So this year, I figured, okay, well, it got canceled last time, so I'm going to go hit all those spots this year. Thanks, Helene.
Yeah.
But there's a couple things. There's, like I say, if you're on a trip, hopefully you've checked the weather and realized what was coming your way. But heard one report, someone was paddling the Mississippi. They pulled their canoe up high, thinking, okay, I'm good. I'll wait it out.
Hmm.
They woke up in the morning and the banks had flooded a lot higher and their canoe was gone.
Mm-hmm.
So they were put out the feelers to, hey, has anybody seen a canoe floating around?
Did you see all the Google Maps images I sent you?
Yeah. Campgrounds, state parks.
I found everything in that area. It was national parks, campgrounds, RV campgrounds.
Rafting, whitewater rafting tour companies, operators.
Tour operators. There's a lot in that area.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah, that was right down where I was going, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And guess I'm not now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, have to worry about, low water.
Yeah. And I don't want to feel like I'm making fun of it. It's like it's a very unfortunate event. A lot of people lost their lives and livelihoods and homes. So it's very tragic. But, from my perspective I was thinking from your perspective, you could have been in the area sometime. I didn't know when you were originally planning that trip when it was canceled. But, it's not.
That would have been my third hurricane.
Would not. Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We hit the, well, we were down in Cancun, Mexico one year. We landed just before a hurricane hit. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're swimming while and drinking while they're boarding up the windows on the hotel. Because, you know, that's what one does.
Yeah.
When we were out west in Nova Scotia, we left as Hurricane Earl was hitting.
Oh.
And so this would have been...
Would have been the third one.
Yeah. I go around collecting hurricanes now. But I do.
But, like, a lot of campgrounds are, like, low on the water or water access or whatever. And if you're not expecting it... Like, I don't know how much warning came out or how much people knew for being in the area, but school would have is restarted, so I think a lot of the bigger family trips would have been done, but so I don't know how much...
Yes, it's sort of off... It's beginning of off-season for the tour operators and stuff like that.
So there would have been as many people
and like,
in the area.
Like I say... You know it's coming. Like, you're checking the weather and know there's a potential for something.
Yeah.
So you're maybe double thinking things as well. However, Trey Reeves from Alabama won the Great Alabama 650 paddle race. 650 miles along the core section of the Alabama Scenic River Trail, September 21st to October 1st.
Oh.
You have 10 days to finish. And he had to deal with Helene while doing it. Apparently, when he got down to Mobile, out on the Gulf, he says it was brutal.
I can imagine.
So you're fighting the wind, the waves, the hurricane, trying to win this race. He did it like 6 days. You get 10 days to do it. Yeah. I do believe he won last year as well.
Oh, yeah. So heavy water flow.
Yeah.
Will help you in your time.
More than 40 trillion gallons of rain drenched the southeast United States from Hurricane Helene and a run-of-the-mill rainstorm that sloshed ahead of it. Unheard of amount of water that has stunned experts.
I've never even heard of this kind of rain.
Right?
I didn't know it was possible for the sky to hold this much moisture.
Enough to fill the Dallas Cowboys Stadium 51,000 times. Or Lake Tahoe just once. It's enough to fill more than 60 million Olympic-sized swimming pools or 619 days of constant water flow over Niagara Falls.
That's like nuts.
Almost 2 years of constant water. That's a lot of water. But you got to think with all the winds and picking everything up off the Gulf and everything else. And wow.
Yeah, it was... It's tragic, but it's shocking at the same time. It's like, oh, that's so much water.
Yeah.
So insane. And it was such a wide swath, too. It wasn't just a small hurricane. It stretched out over a very large area. Oy.
It did. So hopefully everything gets cleaned up enough and, you know.
Anybody listening from the area, I'm sorry this hit you and... Hopefully you everybody recovers well down there.
Yes. Five deepest lakes in the U.S., speaking of Lake Tahoe, of the roughly 500,000 lakes in the contiguous United States, plus over 3 million more in Alaska, only five attain maximum depths of more than 1,000 feet. Surprisingly, only one of these is a Great Lake.
Did we look at Canadian lakes that are deep?
Well, I don't remember this.
We should have researched it. Yeah, this is all.
These are just in the U.S.
U.S. based thing.
So Lake Pendere, 1,158 feet deep.
That's crazy.
Shaped like a human ear.
Lake Ontario is, I think, maximum 720.
Yeah, it's not all that because you think the Great Lakes, right? Mm-hmm. Oh. Its name roughly means ear pendant in French. Pendere. Lies in the Idaho Panhandle, carved out of the glaciers during the last ice age, may have been partially filled by a series of mega floods that tore across the Pacific Northwest many thousands of years ago, following repeated ruptures of a massive ice dam in the area. See, that's why I want a time machine so that I can go back and see this
I'd love
stuff.
To see it.
Just to prove people wrong.
So have you heard about this ice dam?
Yeah.
They called it... What was the... It held back... I think they called it Lake Athabasca, Lake Algonquin, Lake something. Anyway, so this ice dam was huge, and it held water back at about the Canadian border or just north of it. And it was like, there's a... Like,
I mean, everything was covered in ice back like then, too.
A kilometer more of ice over North America.
Yeah.
Northern North America.
During World War II, the U.S. Navy operated one of the country's largest naval training centers there, and to this day, the Navy uses the deep and quiet waters of the lake to conduct submarine experiments.
Isn't that something?
Lake Bonderay is also known for its big fish, including a 37-pound rainbow trout.
Whoa.
Caught in 1947.
Huh.
A 32-pound bull trout caught in 1949.
Hmm.
There's a myth that the Bonderay paddler, a water creature akin to the Loch Ness Monster, calls the lake home. I don't think I've ever heard about that one.
What was the name of that
creature? The Bonderay paddler.
Bonderay paddler.
Yeah.
Well, they weren't very creative on that one.
Yeah. Like all the lakes in the list, Bonderay struggles with some of the environmental problems, including pollution and invasive species. So that is 1,158 feet deep. Lake Superior is number 2 out of the 5. 1,332 feet deep. When glaciers plowed through the upper Midwest during the last ice age, they fashioned the region's soft rock into huge basins and then filled with water as the ice retreated. Superior is the biggest, deepest, coldest, and cleanest. It's the only Great Lake that's over 1,000 feet deep, holds about 10% of the world's fresh surface water, more than all the other Great Lakes combined. Covers a surface area of about 31,700 square miles, more than any other lake in the world except the Caspian Sea. Superior is so vast, the sun reportedly sets 35 minutes later on its western shore than it does on the southeastern shore.
That's amazing.
Fed by hundreds of rivers and streams, Superior waters flow slowly through other Great Lakes out in the Atlantic Ocean. And thanks to the construction of the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Seaway System, cargo vessels can follow the path of the water and journey more than 2,000 miles from Duluth, Minnesota, the site of North America's farthest inland freshwater seaport, to the Atlantic.
That's amazing.
It suffered in the past from overfishing and contamination from mining, aluminum smelting, paper milling, and other industrial activities. But because of its relative remoteness, its water remained fairly clean and its biodiversity well preserved. Superior is warming faster than the other Great Lakes, and algae blooms are starting to appear.
There's a mass of water. Like, why is it warming faster?
And see, I always thought it was colder than the rest.
I thought it should be colder because it has the largest quantity.
But I guess at the surface,
it's a bigger heat sink. So once it freezes up, actually, does it freeze up in the winter?
I think a couple years ago was the first time it hasn't, if I'm not mistaken.
So I don't think Lake Ontario has frozen up since, I think, 1916 or 1920.
Yeah. So maybe it is the warmest.
Hmm.
Lake Chelan, Lake Chelan, 1,486 feet deep. Another glacial lake, Washington's Lake Chelan, was shaped by one of the ice sheets moving down from the northwest as a second ice sheet moved up from the southeast. The two tongues of ice met somewhere in the middle, says Philip E. Long, director of nonprofit Lake Chelan Research Institute. Points out that the drop-off from the top of the surrounding peaks to the bottom of the lake is considered one of the deepest gorges in North America. So if you go up, climb the top of one of the mountains, from the top there all the way to the bottom, like that's deeper than Grand Canyon.
Have you looked it up on a map?
Yeah, why?
It's like a hair. It's hair thin, but it's really long.
Extremely skinny. Lake Chelan is 50 and a half miles long and only 2 miles wide at its widest point. Water body resembles a fjord and acts almost like a slow-moving river.
Isn't that something?
Top of the lake near North Cascades National Park is forested, remote, and largely off-limits to development, whereas the bottom portion is surrounded by apple orchards, wineries, and vacation homes, along with hydroelectric dam that raised the level of the lake about 20 feet when it was constructed nearly 100 years ago.
I want to go paddle.
They say the lake faces increased pressures from housing development, wildfires, motorboats, near-shore algae growth, and rising populations of Canada geese and non-native Asian clams.
Hmm.
Asian clams I've seen everywhere, it seems. That's an issue. Yeah. The lake also recovering from past logging and mining activity. In one bay, old sunken logs still litter the lake floor. From past use of pesticide DDT, which can be found in extremely high concentrations of lake trout.
Huh.
Number four, speaking of Lake Tahoe, 1,645 feet deep. So we've gone from 1,158 feet all the way up to 1,645 feet. Major tourist destination for hikers, cyclers, boaters, skiers, and swimmers. Lake Tahoe lies nestled within the Sierra Nevada Mountains along the border of California and Nevada. Outside of Lake Superior, it's the largest lake on this list, covering a surface area of about 191 square miles and containing some 39 trillion gallons of water. So that's what we were saying is, there was enough water in Hurricane Helene that dropped.
Yeah.
They said 40 trillion gallons.
Could have filled this.
This is 39 trillion gallons. 63 streams flow into the lake and only one flows out. Formed some 2 million years ago by a tectonic movements and volcanic activity, Lake Tahoe has been further shaped by erosion, earthquakes, and glaciers. About 50,000 years ago, earthquake triggered an underwater landslide that carved out what is now known as McKinney Bay. Known for its clarity, visitors could at one point see more than 100 feet down. From the 1960s to the 90s, Tahoe lost about 1 foot of clarity per year.
Huh.
That's 30 feet. Luckily, the clarity has since leveled off at around 70 feet, thanks largely to the stream and wetland restorations, as well as rules that require landowners to limit the amount of sediment and fine particles that run off their property into the lake. Recent years, climate change has taken a toll, exacerbating droughts and wildfires, raising water temperatures, and limiting the amount of snowfall. Meanwhile, the introduction of Asian clams has stimulated near-shore algae blooms.
There's
somebody introducing an awful lot of Asian clams.
There's a called Seeker Cove. There's a nude beach on the northeast side of Lake Tahoe.
Really?
And I can see. I can't zoom in. I'm trying to zoom in, but
wait, is that you, Derek?
I do see people on towels.
It's because it's a beach.
Yeah.
Do you see bathing suits on those people?
And it's just not clear.
Why do you like Google Maps? I'm getting out nude beaches. Derek's going on a cross country.
You can see a lot of beach umbrellas. There's beach umbrellas and towels, and you can sort of make out the outline of people.
Well, isn't that a nude beach on the island down in, was it Hanlon's Point in Toronto Harbor?
Oh, I don't know.
I think that's a nude beach, is it not? Yeah. You don't need to travel all the way to Lake Tahoe, buddy. number five, the last one. At 1,943 feet.
That's crazy.
Crater Lake.
So the formation of this lake is what blew me away.
Yeah. That's a pun in there. A relative youngster among U.S. water bodies, Crater Lake formed around 7,700 years ago when Mount Mazama, a volcano in the Cascade Range in Oregon, exploded so powerfully that it collapsed on itself, forming a caldera that then filled with the rain and snowmelt. You guess you could say it blew its top. Now protected as a national park, Crater Lake is known for its deep blue color. With an undeveloped shoreline and a ban on private boats, it's even clearer than Lake Tahoe. Wizard Island, a volcanic cinder cone, extends 763 feet above the lake's surface. Even at Crater Lake, environmental challenges have arisen. The proliferation of non-native crayfish, for example, has decimated populations of the Mazama newt, which lives nowhere else on Earth, and has also led to the increased algae growth. Since 1965, summer surface water temperatures have increased by 5.6 degrees Fahrenheit, scientists have found.
It's amazing that it can be that deep from a volcanic eruption.
Yeah. No streams running in or out. Crater Lake contains no fish when the Americans first arrived. It has since been stocked with trout and salmon. 1886, U.S. geologists, using nothing more than a lead pipe attached to a piano wire as a sounding apparatus, calculated the maximum depth of the lake at 1,996 feet. So this was back in 1886.
Yes.
A lead pipe and a piano wire.
A lot of piano wire.
Later measurements taken with multi-beam side-scan sonar confirmed that they were only 53 feet off.
It's amazing, eh?
That's not two shabs. Crater Lake is so cavernous at its deepest point that the Eiffel Tower, the Washington Monument, and the Statue of Liberty, all standing on top of each other, wouldn't reach the surface. It's that deep.
How tall is the Burj Khalifa?
So all I'm saying is, if you happen to be out there fishing and you accidentally drop something over the side,
yeah,
you will never, ever see it again. That's pretty much a guarantee. It's like going, what? Is that, it's like 2 miles deep or something like that. What's a mile? 1,000 feet?
2,600 feet is a mile.
Is it? Oh, so it's almost a mile.
Almost a mile. The Burj Khalifa is 830 meters. Now I have to do math.
Uh-oh. No, we don't need to do math. People want to know, yeah, figure it out yourself. So so we went from 1,158 feet to 1,943 feet. Those are the deepest lakes in the United States.
That's a lot of depth. That's a lot of water.
Right? And it's all, oh, say, except for the volcano.
Mm-hmm.
You got all those glaciers and
yep.
stuff happening.
So if you're looking to get rid of a body.
I know five lakes. Could you imagine how many bodies are down there? If they were to take a sub or something down there.
Mm-hmm.
And start scouring. We've been watching this thing on Netflix, this, with his James Cameron. He's going in under the water with the submersibles and the Explorer, Explorer vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going way down like 2,000 something feet or something like that.
He went to the bottom of the Marianas Trench.
So you can go. They can send something down 1,900 feet.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yes.
It'd be cool to go down and see what's down down there. And it'd be cool to see how much sediment is down there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I know there's the one lake in Algonquin Park. They did a core sample at the bottom because it's like deep.
Yep.
And so they went down the bottom and they did a core sample way down into the bottom of the lake. And they pulled out this massive chunk and they could see all these like years. That this year there, look, this spot here, you could see there was a fire, forest fire that happened because of all the ash that settled to the bottom and all that sort of stuff. So it'd be cool to get a core sample from the bottom of one of these. Some of these lakes to see, you know, what happened before.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
There's, oh, you distracted me. Anyways, I was going to say, I was trying to remember and look it up, the name of the lake in Algonquin that you were just talking about. It starts with an E, I can't remember. But they did the same kind of core sample of Pugialet Crater up in northern Quebec.
Pingalowit
Crater. Yeah. So that one is also that's a crater.
That's a meteor strike.
And so that's super deep as well. And because it has there's no inflow except rain and no outflow. So it's a pristine lake. It's very protected. You're not allowed to do anything in it, on it, whatever. And they did core samples there. And because it's, they said it's a map of history. Just like you take core samples of the glaciers and so on. It's like it gives you what happened when on the planet, right? So they have all these layerings of whatever debris falls in with the rain just from what's in the atmosphere. It's like, oh, look, this is a 1786 volcanic explosion at this location, yada, 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 right?
It's so pretty cool how they do that.
Very interesting. The other thing you were talking about bodies. So one of the things that they noted when it comes to like mainly ocean, but because the deep oceans have a lack of calcium, so their bodies only last. So the animals come in and remove whatever soft parts, and the bones are leached out within 5 or 6 years.
Really?
Yeah. So
there's nobody left on the Titanic then.
Well, they did a study. They did a study on the Titanic, and because the first submersibles go down, they just found this field of shoes. It's like, why is there so many boots everywhere? Where's the bodies, right? And so they had to do a study to come up with a determination, and they did some water samples at that depth. And so what they determined is that there's a lack of calcium in the water at those depths. And so it just leaches out. It absorbs the bones.
Wow. So, did not know that.
And well, we talked about that before when we mentioned, so all the crabs out west, the crabs are warming up, the ocean's warming up. And mm-hmm. so we talked about the potential of using the Pacific Ocean up near Alaska.
As a dump site for bodies.
As a graveyard.
We talk about hiding bodies an awful lot.
I know. Obviously, we have no intention because we wouldn't be giving ourselves away.
Not now.
But anyways, they talked about that because the crabs would come in and consume the soft parts, and, mm-hmm. and then the oceans would consume the hard bits, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's interesting. I don't know if the same thing happens in freshwater. I just remember reading about it in the oceans, in the Atlantic and Pacific. So there you go. It's Science Corner with Derek.
Right. Now we just need to test out the theory. Does this happen? Yes. Any volunteers?
So, but it's interesting. It's interesting that which is why they don't find bodies after so many years in the ocean.
They would just find the bits and pieces of clothing.
Yeah, like shoes and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the knob-heeled shoes from the Titanic are like everybody was wearing shoes, and you can see a debris field of shoes. And so, you know, it's like, oh.
See, I've never gotten really into the Titanic as much as...
I
know it happened.
I haven't looked into it, but every time I come across something, I do read it.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm a prolific reader.
As long as it's not books.
Exactly.
Or written material. I read everything that's not written.
It's got to have pictures.
If there's no pictures, you can count me out.
I do.
Ooh, cartoons.
I do read a lot. I just have trouble getting into books. I used to be a prolific reader of novels.
I find, like, I used to read a lot of books, but I just don't have as much time anymore.
Yeah.
I read articles a lot more than did before.
Because they're short.
And, okay, you know, I can quickly read this while I'm making dinner or something. Yeah. And then, oop, okay.
Before YouTube Shorts and TikTok came along, it was like, hey, this is just a two-column news article in the newspaper. I can read that.
We don't even get a newspaper anymore.
I know.
The city canceled it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we used to get a newspaper twice.
Oh, yeah. Same for us. It was all the same. All of Durham Region used to get the same newspaper. The what?
Not the Enterprise, the...
Oh, yeah. I can't remember what it was called either.
Yeah.
But it's gone now.
Yeah, it's gone for a few years now. So I used to save them up and then take them camping. Fire starter. roll them up tight enough.
Yeah.
And they're like basically a log.
Yeah.
Right?
And every community had their own little one. And we used to have a history corner by the local curator of the Beauville Museum. So it was always interesting stuff.
Yeah. Not anymore. Now you got to read a book.
I know.
Or watch TV. Pain in the butt.
I know.
What do I got? Oh, we got a couple more things here. Two world records fell during the 9th annual running of the Ely Marathon and Highland Bank Half Marathon. And it was thanks to the unique canoe country twist on the event. Many communities host marathons, but only Ely hosts the Canoe Portage Marathon and Half Marathon. The iconic event has regularly attracted a handful of the hardcore to the end of the road just to take part in one of the most grueling events ever imagined.
Yeah.
Just six individuals took part in the full canoe portage marathon.
So it's not popular.
So it's, yeah, it's not all that popular, but. And they set new men's and women's records in the process. Drew Boyson of Iowa City had never heard of the canoe portage marathon until a week before this year's event. He was planning to be in the area to visit friends near Isabella when they jokingly suggested he could run a marathon with a canoe on his back. It was just a joke when I told him, said his friend Jeff. Boyson, 30 years old, was no stranger to extreme physical exertion. He has hiked the entire Appalachian Trail twice, completed the Pacific Crest and Continental Divide trails, rode his bike across the United States. He ran his first marathon last year and competed in an Ironman competition earlier this month. So a week before the Ely event, he signed up, trained by running a mile with a canoe the evening before the race. Have you trained? Yes. How long? Last night after dinner. Showed up the next morning and crushed the previous men's world record of 4 hours, 23 minutes, and 20 seconds, hitting the finish line in 4 hours, 11 minutes, and 4 seconds, earning a $5,000 prize put up by the, was it the Paragus Northwoods Company?
Yes, yeah.
For new world records. Last October, he had finished his first marathon in 3 hours and 50 minutes, which means the canoe only added 21 minutes to his time.
That's crazy. But Paragus builds really ultralight canoes. I wonder. I don't know what the weight is. It doesn't give the weight. But it probably helped a lot.
They need to put, like, Grummins on these guys. It was a much different story for 44-year-old Victoria Renoa of Shakopee, formerly of Tower, who destroyed the previous women's record in the Portage Marathon by nearly an hour and a half. Ha-ha! Boyson, you little 20 to 10, 12 minutes. Yeah, she's got an hour and a half on you, buddy. She enticed by the $5,000 cash prize for setting a new world record. She'd begun training nearly a year ago in preparation. She bought an ultralight canoe from Paragus Northwoods Company in the spring and would be regularly spotted on the streets of her southwestern Twin City suburb as she ran with her canoe. I would have yelled out every time I saw her, "You're doing it wrong!"
It's so wild. I can't imagine how weird that would look.
Right?
You're just in your hometown. It's like, what was that? Did I just, what?
Well, there's the freaky lady again. building her endurance and strength expectation, she'd have to beat the men's record in order to collect the cash prize. Through mile 16, she was on pace for the men's record, but fell back in the later miles as her legs began to ache intensely. After an allowed pit stop at an aid station, she resolved to power through the pain and finished 5 hours, 25 minutes, 34 seconds.
That's impressive.
Third place overall and an hour, 24 minutes ahead of previous record. Set by Auralee Strege, the only other woman to ever finish the brutal competition. I think we need to sign up for that.
No.
Come on. 4 hours of running, dude? You can do that in your sleep.
Sure.
Renoa's story and sheer determination prompted a special second $5,000 prize split by Paragus and race organizers from the proceeds. Also prompted consideration of changing how the prize is awarded in the future to give women equal opportunity.
That's awesome. They changed the rules for that way.
Mm-hmm. Both Boyson and Renoa also receive free Boundary Waters canoe trips sponsored by Spirit of the Wilderness Outfitters. After that, I don't know if I want to be in a canoe again for a while.
Yeah, I might need a break.
Yeah. Be nice to be in one rather than carrying it.
Yes, yeah.
Among the other marathon portage finishers were Cam Regan of Portland, the husband of Ely's Amy Bianco, who took second overall with a time of 4:35. Ben Sunshine Gardner of Ely, who finished fourth. Dana Gilbertson of Duluth. So it's a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
Only the third woman to ever complete the Portage Marathon and bested the previous record by 50 minutes. So regardless of who, the women's record was going down.
Yes. Yeah.
5 hours, 59 minutes, 36. Good for fifth place out of six racers. 35-year-old Travis Meyer of Minneapolis finished sixth with a time of 6 hours, 16 minutes, and 43 seconds.
That's a long
time. Travis, somebody's got to come in the last, buddy. So, hey, hold your head high. Yeah. Hold your head high. There is a relay team part of this, too. Full marathon teams will be allowed up to 7 members. Half marathon teams will up to 6 members. Each team will be issued 1 bib that needs to stay within the canoe and be passed on to your teammate. First runner will start the marathon or half marathon field. There will not be a separate start for the relay teams, so everybody starts at the same time. The other members will need to be at their exchange areas well before the fastest runners pass by, as area roads will be closed. So the full, there's 6 stops, pit stops. So you can have all your teammates at one of those stops. For the half marathon, there's only 5.
Does the time stop while you're in the pit stop?
I would say no. Because basically the pit stop is, here's the boat, take it,
yeah.
Run, Forrest, run. Run, Forrest. Exchange areas will be the aid stations and will be marked. If you are a team less than 6 people, you can choose which exchange areas you would like to be placed at. So if you're only 4 people doing the marathon,
yeah,
you can choose which 4, or I guess other 3, which 3 of these aid stations that you want to...
Exactly.
So you divide the... Yeah, so you won't need all of them, right?
Which means each individual has to do more.
So if you are looking to do something different next year, just Google the ELY, canoe portage.
So along this same theory, I don't know if they're still doing it. I did look it up. I can't see any details. They don't have dates, but the Quetico Foundation for Quetico Provincial Park, they were doing you pick a portage from Quetico, and there's some long ones if you want to mimic the long one. So if it's a 4-kilometer portage, you say, I'm going to do this Quetico portage, but I'm going to do it in my own hometown, and take pictures of yourself doing the portage. You have to get the same distance. And so it's for fundraising.
Do they do that every year? Or is that just the one year?
I don't know. On the website, it didn't say have years, but you could see the sponsorship.
I thought it was just a fundraiser for that one year.
I thought so too, but when you go to the website, it looks like it's still active.
Oh.
It looks like it. I don't know. Right. Maybe they haven't updated the website. I don't know. But anyways, Quetico did do it at one time.
Did done do it. Well, you know, when you get a bunch of people with canoes running marathons, that could cause some chaos. I know, right? Speaking of chaos, chaos on the Les River. Hundreds of school children on a kayak excursion near Dinant were taken by surprise Thursday afternoon when the flow of the Les River suddenly increased. This is over in Belgium.
Yes.
And you think hundreds of school children on a kayak excursion, like, really?
That sounds like a bad idea.
So that was
best of days.
That was like 50 people?
Yeah.
The emergency services were sent into a rescue en masse, but rescue workers in the Dinant area reassured the public that no one was in mortal danger. They were called to the area early in the afternoon. Around 2 p.m., the local fire brigade was called out to children in difficulty on the Les. They didn't have a head count to start the operation, but it turned out to be between...
They didn't have a head count.
400 and 500 teenagers that Summers. Needed to be evacuated.
Approximately.
Even still, if you go 400.
No, what I'm saying is that they didn't have exact numbers.
Right?
Like, what kind of controls is that on an event like that with children?
The youngsters were sent out onto the water while the water level was too high, says the mayor. Everyone who went down the Les this morning says they should never have left. Some have hypothermia. A helicopter was flying over to check for young people stuck in hard-to-reach places. Some young people fell into the water and were rescued by walkers. Witnesses say there was insufficient supervision provided given the high flow of water. 7 teenagers were taken to various hospitals in the region for hypothermia or anxiety attacks, but their lives were not in danger.
Wow.
400 to 500 kids. How much supervision do you need?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I think you
more just than 10 teachers, I'm thinking.
Oh, one person, one teacher per one teacher per 100.
One maybe? Gym teacher with a whistle.
Can you hear me at the back?
No running on the deck. We have stopped the kayaking tours and are now trying to help the people who are worried, says the manager of the kayaking company, Oliver Pittance. The company is the only one to offer kayak trips down the Lesse. Some people have fallen into the water, but everyone is wearing a life jacket, so no one is in mortal danger. However, there are about 600 people. Oh, wait, it was only 400, then it went to 500. Now it's 600 people. There was 7,000 people. There are only about 600 people on the water, which is a big group to manage.
No, really?
No, you're kidding me. Things, I could do that in my sleep with one hand tied behind my back. We're in a blindfold. Pittance explained that this situation was caused by a sudden large flow of water that no one had seen coming. Because there were 600 kids in the way. The Lesse rose by 1.5 meters in 2 hours, causing a veritable tidal wave. This is a natural phenomenon I have never experienced before, he says. The flow of the river, which was 12.73 cubic meter per second at 6 a.m., reached 29.41 cubic meters per second by 3 p.m. in 9 hours. That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Despite the large number of young people surprised by the force of the current, search operations ended around 4:30, and the evacuated students were greeted with thermal blankets. There is no one left on the Lesse, confirmed the fire brigade.
They're all under it.
There's no one left on it. They're all in it. They conducted a head count of the teenagers to ensure no one is missing.
We don't know.
How could you do a head count? It's gone from 400 to 600 kids.
Well, we don't know how many we started with, but we found this many.
So that was our count.
That was our count.
We found 482 and a half, so that's what we're going with.
We were short on headcount, so we started knocking on doors to increase the number.
We just started, Is your kid missing?
No.
All right, well, he's not counted.
No, my kid's here. Okay, send him out.
Right.
We need to increase the headcount.
Wow.
Like that, to have children out on a river in a situation like that and not have an initial head count, that's nuts.
And there's got to be some sort of
liability waiver or something?
Organization to it all.
That too.
Oh, I'm sure there was liability waivers up the ding-dong for that one. Otherwise, dude's just lost his entire kayak company.
We won't be doing that again.
Right? Well, but it would have been good if they would have rafted all 600 kids together. Everybody hold on to the kayak next to you. It'd be this giant log jam of kayaks and kids going
like,
down the river.
Look like an ice floe. You could have polar bears walk across them.
A colorful ice floe. Just going all the way down the river.
Yeah. The great...
How do you not?
The Great Pacific Plastic Gyre.
Yeah. On the Lesse River in Belgium. Yeah. Wow. It was kids, kayaks, and chaos.
Yes. Chaos reigned that day.
It was supreme. It was awesome. These kids are going to be sitting there in 60 years. I remember it was like yesterday. It was chaos. Complete and utter chaos.
They'll either have a very clear memory or they'll just completely forget it.
Yeah, I've locked the trauma out. Yeah, there was kayaks and kids everywhere, as far as I could see.
That's crazy.
I had my one buddy. Oh, man, that's...
That's... It seems so irresponsible to have that many kids on the water and not have
an
initial...
I can't even fathom that many...
Like, but why wouldn't you have an initial head count?
Right?
You should know that.
You should have a list of all the kids.
Because at the end of the day, you need to know, hey, are we missing one or 10?
And you should have one, like, operator, with, like, even if it was, like, every 25 kids.
Yeah.
So they can keep, okay, here's all my kids here. So the first group with 25 go down, second group with 25 go down, third group with 25 go down. So at least you can sort of keep track of the kids in your group.
How old are they? Like mid-teens?
They said teenagers.
Yeah.
And then they referred to them as kids and teenagers, so I got to think lower teens.
Yeah. Oh.
I remember like it was yesterday. 2024 was the summer.
We're never going to do this again.
Oh, it was the last time I ever went kayaking. I remember my buddy Timmy. He was kid number 487.
Yes.
So they say. Oh, some of this stuff, I just shake my head, dude.
It's mind-boggling.
I just shake my head. All you can do is laugh.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You got anything else?
I do not have anything to contribute at this time.
Well, alrighty. Well, glad you had a good time. I wish you would have got on that fishing
kayak. You know, I hadn't thought about it at the time. I wasn't thinking I need a bit for the podcast.
You were just dazzled watching him out there. Not even thinking you should do
it. Yeah, in the future, I will think ahead and say, you know what? I might want to talk about this on the podcast.
Right? So dude, get off that. It's my
turn. Make sure I do it.
Yeah, just kick him off. Tackle him.
Let me kill the battery.
Steal all his stuff and go. When no one's looking. When he comes into shore for a pee break.
Yeah. These were very elaborate kayaks, though. Like, I was like, what is that?
Oh, we were down at Canucopia watching,
looking
at them all.
They're not flat bottom, too. Yeah. They're not flat bottom. Yeah. There's all kinds of opening cavities in the bottom as well. It's like, oh, this can't be very efficient on the water.
Yeah, but apparently they are. Yeah. Cool.
Very strange.
Now you need to buy one just to find out.
Nope.
Call your buddy from work. Say, hey, let's go to Lake Ontario. I'm going to give it a whirl.
These are expensive kayaks.
So steal it.
Okay, there we go. There we go. I used my book fund to buy a kayak.
All those books you could make into a kayak. A book yak.
Yeah.
Take all the hard covers.
Yeah.
Glue them all together. I'm telling you. Telling you. Well, you want to find out more about us? Nerd. I'm calling everybody a nerd.
Maybe they don't want to learn about us.
Well, if they do want to learn more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can download, and we're on YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.